Hello, and welcome to the Matthew Clark Interviews Podcast, where we sit down with the industry's key figures. Today, we're talking to David Bicknell, Chief Winemaker of Oak Ridge Wines, a family-owned winery in Australia's Yarra Valley. Founded in 1978, Oak Ridge are an award-winning and internationally renowned winery that pioneered wine growing in the Upper Yarra Valley region. Thank you for being here today, David. How are you finding London?
It's not raining at the moment, so it's perfect.
good. You've been to London quite a few times already, haven't you?
Many times.
So it's really business only.
This is business. No, it's not. It's always pleasure.
Well, it's wine and food.
Well, my business is pleasure.
That is. Right, so first thing I want to ask you, I saw that wine writer James Halliday described you earlier this year as an exceptionally gifted winemaker who exemplifies all that's admirable about the movers and shakers of Australia's wine artisans. Now, that's quite a compliment. How did you get to this point? Where did your life in wine start?
You know, James is my uncle.
Is he?
No, he's not. He's not. James is a mentor, though, and he doesn't live very far from us. Mm-hmm. So we're his local restaurant as well. We do see a lot of James, so we do have a close relationship that is both professional and personal now.
Mm-hmm.
And James is quite an old man now, so but I think James has been able to track my career, and that's always nice where you've got somebody like that looking over your shoulder, and I think he's seen what we've done and tried to do in terms of our production and in terms of style, and I guess it stands out because it's not what everyone else was doing at the time, the way we've directed our business, the way we've fought. Because it's a business that Oak Ridge will be 40 next year, and it's in its third phase of ownership.
Mm-hmm.
So I've battled through two difficult ones.
Yeah.
And I think he respects the fact that we've been able to keep the winemaking and the viticulture pretty consistent despite the business changing hands,
mm-hmm.
and ownership changing. We've managed to keep the team together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's often the hardest thing.
Yeah, development as well.
Well, he's seen the wines from when I first went to Oak Ridge back in 2002,
mm-hmm.
and the wines were pretty grim,
mm-hmm.
And that's an understatement. So for us to turn it around as quickly as we did, I think it took only 2 or 3 years to really turn the winemaking around,
mm-hmm.
But to continue to push for what we thought was the right thing to do,
yeah.
which is the opposite of what everyone else was doing at the time. And so we really developed this philosophy of trying to understand the individual sites that we work with,
mm-hmm.
and really try and pull apart all the detail.
Yeah.
So very much everything we've done has been minimalist,
mm-hmm.
to try and take out as many influences, and then we can determine what the core issues are,
mm-hmm.
and try and improve them. So it's been slow, steady, you know, things that have happened. So when James says nice things, well, yeah. it's good.
Yeah, well deserved, I'd say.
Well, I hope so.
Very good. Now, following this compliment, you've also just won the Australian Gourmet Traveller Wines Winemaker of the Year Award.
That's probably more important than James. Oh, that's a dreadful thing to say, but it is, because if you look back, Gourmet Traveller have been running the Winemaker of the Year for 20 years,
mm-hmm.
Which predates a lot of the things that James has done.
Yeah.
And when you look through the roll call of who those winemakers have been over the years, the Jeffrey Grossetts and Vanya Cullens and Steve Panels of the world, you know, it's the elite winemaking producers in the country in the last, you know, 20 years,
yeah.
and to be in that company, that's pretty humbling.
Yeah.
And because it's not an individual, an award from an individual,
mm-hmm.
like James does,
yeah.
it's a group of writers.
Yeah.
a reasonably large selection of writers who come up with the award. To have so many of them put you up, again, it's a really gratifying thing to happen. Of course, I wasn't going to go to the awards. I did everything I could to get out of it, because it's just not what we're into.
Yeah.
You know, it's nice when people say nice things about you, but it's not what we're in the business for.
Yeah, it's about making amazing wines.
Well, it is, and that's what we love doing. But I think, for me, the most gratifying thing about it is it wasn't just about the wines, it's also about the industry involvement I've had. And so there are a couple of key things that I've been involved in the industry. One is wine show judging, where you know, I've been lucky enough to be the chief judge in some of the big wine shows in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've obviously had some guidance in terms of style and style direction.
Mm-hmm.
But there's another industry body called the Victorian Pinot Noir Workshop, which I co-founded 16 years ago. And it's one of the reasons why Australian Pinot Noir is better, not because of me, but because of this organisation, where we get together as a group of winemakers, 60, and we tear each other's wines to shreds, pretty
make
much.
It better.
And it is, and it's all about improving and improvement. And we share a lot of technical information.
Mm-hmm.
And we taste wines from all over the world, and always tasting blind, so you never know what's in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you think about what you're doing, and it's made all of these winemakers go back to their vineyards and take back new technique, new ideas,
mm-hmm.
Technical ideas that can improve their wines, and that's one of the reasons why it's dramatically improved. So really nice to get that recognition through that body as well.
Yeah, so all in all, quite an amazing year for you so far.
It has been, yeah.
Good. Yep. Now, just going on to the Yarra Valley, so it's one of the oldest regions in Victoria. How would you describe the region and the wines for those that are not too familiar with the Yarra Valley?
Well, there's two ways of describing it. One is that it's completely schizophrenic. The other is probably the more traditional approach, which is that we're in a classic cool climate environment.
Mm-hmm.
And so for the majority of us, it's the classic varieties of Northern Europe that we deal in on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be hard for people to understand. I think that really the perception now is that it's Chardonnay and Pinot Noir equal first, and then Daylight to the next most important variety. But it's an unusual region in that we effectively have three different climates in the valley. And while we see the valley as being quite small, compared to Australian standards of everything, it's a small region.
Mm-hmm.
It's only 40 kilometres by 40 kilometres. You know, that's a lot bigger than Burgundy.
Yeah.
But the vineyard area is quite small and spread out. So we have three different climates, and so depending on where you are in the valley and depending on the geology you're in, because we have in general two different types of geology, it depends on your potential with any particular variety.
Mm-hmm.
So people at the very high end of the valley in the south are really only making sparkling wine. Those in the middle steppes, which is where we're mostly these days, it is Chardonnay and Pinot Noir in the higher, cooler parts.
Mm-hmm.
And then down on the valley floor, it's the later varieties. And so Cab has historically been king.
Mm-hmm.
From the early days, and Shiraz, and there's a lot of experimental work going on with other varieties now for other producers. But I would suggest that Cab is still the number one variety down there, but it's become a smaller part of the valley.
You said it's a cool climate region, Yarra Valley. What's the secret then to great cool climate wines?
Well, it's balance. In fact, well, the three most important things with any wine are balance, balance, and balance. Yeah, it's, you know, it doesn't get any more difficult than that. And because we're dealing with grapes where we don't have to ameliorate them with anything, i.e. they've got wonderful acidity and lowish pHs and good flavour, at relatively low sugar levels, it makes winemaking almost effortless. Now that's, you know, we all say it's effortless, but there's a lot of effort that goes into growing those grapes. But because the raw material is so good, we're able to make these wines that just have wonderful balance and elegance and finesse.
Well, it is truly an amazing range that we'll talk about in a little bit. Now, just to touch back on it, we talked about it a little bit before. What is your philosophy at Oak Ridge?
Well, I think it's about purity and elegance.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that I always trot out and will trot out, you know, this afternoon is that we're trying to make fruit-flavoured wines, not tree-flavoured wines. So while we do use and we buy new barrels every year, the amount of new oak that we use is really quite low because oak is just a, for us, barrels are just a vessel that helps us to mature and create wines, but we don't want it to be the dominating feature of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is. It's about purity of expression and elegance, and when we get it right, there are wines that, and this is when anyone gets it right, they have a natural resonance, these wines, where even lay people who don't understand perhaps fine wine will try and go, "Oh, I like that. Don't know why, but I really like it."
Yeah.
Like there's something about it, and that's the bit we're trying to capture
mm-hmm.
with these wines.
Yeah, well, that's I think a great way to.
I nearly hypnotised you there, didn't I?
Sorry,
I nearly hypnotised
yes,
you with
I
that.
Was. Just, where's the glass of wine? I should actually be drinking
we
during
should.
This interview. Right, now just talking about the range that you've got. So we've got 10 wines that you produce, but from all of them, your Chardonnays attract by far the most attention. What do you think is the secret to that?
Luck. It is partly luck
mm-hmm.
because the vineyards that we're working with and the mature vineyards that we're working with, and so you know, they're up to, most of them are between 20 and 40 years of age, so they're in their prime working career.
Yeah.
And most of these vineyards were planted for sparkling wine, and going back 20 years ago, and in fact 40 years ago, where they were planted, the region was only capable of getting them to sparkling. Climate change
mm-hmm.
Has come along and is quite real, and in the last 15 years the average harvest date has moved forward by 1.5 days per year, so
mm-hmm.
we're looking at, you know, nearly a month earlier than 15 years ago, which is quite terrifying. And we're not sure if that'll keep marching on. It's hard for us to conceive it.
Mm-hmm.
But what it's meant is that these varieties, the Chardonnay and Pinot in particular, have moved from only having sparkling-based potential into table wine potential, and reliably into table wine potential.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, it's the cooler sites that we value higher than the slightly warmer ones, because it's not a ripeness thing we're chasing. You know, there's an intersection of flavour and acidity and tannin
mm-hmm.
That we're after in physiological ripeness and sugar ripeness corresponding at the same time. That's the bit we're chasing. And so
mm-hmm.
with the cooler vineyards, we have more of an opportunity with them to nail that picking point. It's the extra 3-4 weeks of reliable weather in autumn that we've now got
mm-hmm.
have pushed all those vineyards into that realm.
Yeah.
And so I have been lucky, because if I was, you know, my age now and sort of stepped into this, it would kind of all be too late. But because it's been happening from early on in my career and we've been able to respond and understand it and move with it, you know, I've walked into probably the best period the Valley's ever going to have for making Chardonnay and Pinot.
Yeah.
Because we're not sure where climate change is going to go.
Mm-hmm.
So it may not get any better than it is now, which I'd be surprised it is, because we can go higher if we need to. There's another step we can go up in the hills, but we're not really prepared to do that at the moment. And for where I am now, to plant another vineyard and to get to the maturity we're at now, I'll be bloody old by the time I finish.
Yeah, you're going to need a lot more luck then, aren't you?
So we need more luck.
Okay, so well, all of the wines do attract a lot of praise, but the local vineyard series, they pick up medals every single year. Can you talk a little bit about that range?
Well, that's the important part of the experiment, really, is to get people to understand and believe in that concept of provenance with the wines that we produce. And I think that in this country it's no different to back home. At the moment, in food in general, the big movement is about food provenance. The cow has been grown by someone, the lettuce by someone, the cheese from a particular producer. Mm-hmm. There are all these elements that sell the story and tell the story of the origins of the food.
Mm-hmm.
And for winemaking, really, in our country, it hasn't been that strong.
Mm-hmm.
The bigger companies have tended to dominate the market, and they tend to be blend from all regions. You know, the whole concept of Southeast Australia, you know, which is an area that's bigger than the United Kingdom,
mm-hmm.
Is the giveaway on that. And we wanted to really push the idea of provenance. You know, it's what part of Burgundy has always been, mm-hmm. is about the provenance of particular vineyards. And I guess that's the model that we can see as being a helpful guide, but we're not going to wait 2,000 years to understand it. You know, we're in a much greater hurry to crack on,
yeah.
and really understand it. And so there's a couple of vineyards that we have dropped by the wayside, and we've bought two vineyards so that we believe in, that have got all that potential, so we can continue to drive that along. And so LVS is that vehicle for those wines.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we haven't changed the price on those wines for years, because we want people to get hooked on that idea.
You want to make it approachable.
And so that they get used to seeing those wines. And every year, you know, with a couple of different vineyards that come out,
mm-hmm.
that there's often one that they will gravitate to, that they prefer.
Yeah.
And often, really, the vineyards, you can sense the house style. You can taste that if you taste the vineyards next to each other.
Mm-hmm.
But they all come in slightly different shapes and sizes, and of course everyone's a little bit different, you know. And so, I mean, we often joke about it, they're just different dress sizes. You know, Lusatia Park has always been the sort of the Kate Moss type figure that's in there, that's, you know, sort of long and lean and elegant.
Mm-hmm.
And Willow Lake is the, you know, the sort of more Sophia Loren, you know, a bit more flesh and you know, there's just a bit more substance about it.
Yeah.
And people gravitate to those styles, and once they get used to it and they like it and they follow those wines, that's what we're after.
Yeah, so it's really about local but also approachable, and not a one size fits all. But
well, it's not
for
a
everyone.
One size fits all, because yeah. everyone's different. And
yeah.
I mean, if you're a fan of Chablis, you know, the different vineyards there have different fans.
Yeah.
Same in Burgundy. And once people sort of get used to that sort of concept and they start to follow the one, the producer and the vineyard that they like, and they buy them regularly,
yeah.
then we get to stay in business.
Yeah, so about the 864, now those wines are only released in the best years and quite small quantities. So what is the story really behind this range, and how important to you is it to put the quality over the quantity?
Yeah. We're not Burgundy, so we can't put any half-assed wines out and charge a Monty for it. You know, it just doesn't work. The extra detail that comes with 864, though, if we look at a vineyard like Lusatia Park, we could conceivably have six different wines from the one block in any one vintage.
Mm-hmm.
And so we put ourselves through the pain of having all of these smaller sections marked out. We've got all the vineyards we have, you know, completely surveyed with elevations as well. So we've made judgment decisions on where we feel that the sections start and end, and we pick these sections separately, we vinify them separately, they mature separately. And it allows us then, through the course of the year, to go through and assess and reassess and reassess and there's always a few bits that we find that are better.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the real kind of detail on site management that we're into now. That's where these A64 wines come from. It's the best bit from the very best bit from the very best picks on the very best vineyards.
So the best of the best.
The best of the best. Yeah. And again, they've had 2,000 years of sorting this out in Burgundy, and every little bit is marked out, and that's really what we're still in the process of doing.
That is quite amazing.
So there's a lot of work.
Yeah, a lot of work. We'll be chasing a little bit of it afterwards, good, won't we? Right, so the final range that we have is the over-the-shoulder range. So what really separates these wines from the others?
Well, we've changed our approach to over-the-shoulder over the years. I'm guilty of dumbing them down in the past,
mm-hmm,
and deliberately making them perhaps more overly fruit-forward than they ought to be, just so it was quite clear if anyone tasted all three of the wines, so 864 and the vineyard wines together, and over-the-shoulder, they go, oh, okay, well, that's obviously the cheapest one,
mm-hmm,
because it tastes that way. And that was one of the most stupid things I've done. So, again, with changing the winery setup and putting more attention into the OTS wines, we've really ratcheted up the quality level of OTS, and they're going through a very similar winemaking process now to all the good parcels as well. Mm-hmm. So the real distinction, though, for OTS is that that in general they're from a variety of vineyards in the valley,
mm-hmm,
and there's also some grower fruit that goes into those as well, where we have a little less control over the viticulture. That sort of forces its hand a little bit because, and there's some warmer sites that often go in there as well, but some of the over-the-shoulder wines are single vineyard wines as well, and we don't say it, we don't state it, but things like the Cabernet Merlot come from our vineyard, where it's all A-grade fruit, and you know, so that's arguably the best wine we make.
Mm-hmm.
It's the best value wine we make,
yeah,
because it's A-grade material. You know, it's $50 material going into $20 wines. The idea of dumbing down wines was really dumb. And sometimes, you know, you've got to get sort of old and grey before you understand and realise these things.
Yeah. Well, at least you realise it. That's
realised
good.
It.
Yeah. What do you see as the future for Oak Ridge? What do you see happening?
Well, I'd like to think there'd be a resurgence in interest in Cabernet.
Mm-hmm.
Because where the winery is and where our restaurant is, we're right in the heart of where all the good cab in the Yarra Valley is grown. And arguably, the three most important wines in the Yarra Valley are still cab, from three of the old estates. So Mount Mary, Yarra Yearing with their dry red number one, and Yeringberg, who are our next door neighbour.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still seen as being the icon wines of the valley. And we're right in that heartland where we grow cab. And if you do believe in the whole concept of terroir and site and what it can give you, then we ought to be sort of moving towards that sort of realm as well.
Thank you so much for taking the time to have a bit of a chat with us today.
Too easy. Just make sure there's drinks next time.
Yes, well, we'll drink now. That's what we're on to now. Good. Well, thank you. To find out more about Oak Ridge, visit the Matthew Clark website or talk to your account manager. And don't forget to join us next time when we will be chatting to Alistair Rimmer, winemaker at Kleine Salza.